Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is our third segment with Dr. Darrell Williams from Baltimore County Public Schools. He is superintendent, the poobah, as I would say, the big cheese, the big
in
guy.
In charge of 115,000 students.
That's all.
And just 20,000 employees.
And budget was $1.4 billion?
No, 1.8.
Oh, I'm only off by 400 million. Sorry.
Billion.
That's why I'm not an accountant. I'll have you know.
Thank our sponsors at Fadley's.
It's a big
soon
budget.
To be not only downtown, we should say. We haven't mentioned it, Nestor.
I'm looking at it right
not
here.
Not only will it be downtown,
right
it will
window.
Be right down the street here in Catonsville. Next to State Fair, we thank our friends at Center Maryland and our latest sponsor, Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtors. Give Jeff a call, ready to buy or sell, 410-746-1547. And always, we remind folks, go on and make a difference at thread.org. They're transforming the city. So, Dr. Williams, we got so much to talk about. We've got one segment to
You're trying
do
to transform the county.
You're trying to change the county. And I'm thinking, knowing you and coming from Montgomery County and knowing that big task ahead, that somehow data-driven decision-making is part of that. Now, that sounds to people out there in their cars going, data-driven decision-making. Make some sense out of that for us.
Well, it feels like it was always data-driven, was it not? I mean, they were give me my Iowa test back in 1976. You know what I mean? Like, so, right? I mean,
what does it mean for my grandchildren? Break it down.
So it means using data to make informed decisions, knowing and looking at multiple data points. You know, I was just having a conversation the other day with a leader and say, you know, folks sometimes judge us on our state assessment, but I have to remind folks, that's one data point. That's one data point given at one particular time of the year, but that doesn't tell the story.
What is that? Just in 30 seconds, what is that?
So the state assessment is
Well, I don't
given.
Have a kid in school right
no,
now.
Right.
So one is in English language arts and one is in math. We have science. And social studies as you get into the upper grades. But it's just a state assessment that will predict or to give you a summary of how successful your student may know the content of that particular grade level, whether it's English or math, whether it's third grade or fourth grade. But it's a data point. It's a state assessment. We took the CTBS when I was in school, mm-hmm. right? The Comprehensive Test of Battery Skills. Why do I remember that? I don't know. It just came to me.
I didn't take it. Look how I turned out.
Yeah, yeah. But the whole point, it was one data point. And what we're trying to do, use multiple data points to determine where our kids can go and to give them open access. I've been pushing more of our kids to look at advanced level courses, AP courses, because, you know, I think once you've had that exposure, that may say, you know, I really like these courses. I have this interest in this field. So using data, data-driven has been a part of my life. You talked earlier about previous leaders. I still remember Dr. Weiss standing in front of us as I was a new principal, and he's writing this data chart and showing the data of all of the district and how do we push that data to make sure we're better than any other school system. What do we need to do in each one of our schools? So, you know, I don't think people should be afraid of data. I say to the principals all the time, data is, we use it, and I stole this from a colleague, we use it as a flashlight, not as a hammer. But it should be asking, we should be asking more questions once we see data. And the more data we look at, the more we can kind of help our students to make decisions. But we can't just rely on one data source. We got to look at multiple data.
We had Dr. Nancy Grasmick on, and she also was providing a master class for Nestor on the importance
of... Man like you and all, but she was pretty cool.
Assessment.
You know?
And one of the things that you all deal with as superintendents, and Dr. Grasmick talked about it in depth, but it always lands on your desk, this whole yin and yang about testing, assessment, what's too much. It's almost like, I would say, it's like the three bears. We've got to get it
just right.
Right. Talk to us about where you see assessment going and how we try to get it just right.
So that is still our struggle. because we can assess every day. Assessment doesn't have to be this formal tool that I describe as a state assessment. Teachers can do informal assessment just to see how well the student learned the concept. It could be done with an exit card. It could be done with the homework assignment. And so I think assessment in itself may have a bad rap. But in terms of we still struggling to get that balance. We don't want our teachers to be assessing all day. We want teaching to happen. But we also have to do what I call dipsticking. We have to check in and see, okay, how are our kids doing? You know, again, I go back to my essential questions. Are our students learning? If not, what are we going to do about it? So we have to do some kind of assessing of the skill set to determine if kids are learning. But now we have more of this accountability, as you talked earlier about the state assessments, entrance exams. It is we do have to strike a balance because we just don't want our kids to be sitting in rooms taking, you know, a multiple choice or completion assessment for 3 or 4 hours.
And busy work, right?
And you don't want them stopping in the spring, right? While the assessments are over, school's over.
Correct, correct. When they give the assessment, then, okay, I'm done. No, right. We have another month of learning that needs to take place. Yeah, you know.
Well, in addition to the whole assessment issue and data-driven decisions, Nestor really is interested in this concept of equity. And I guess it's in big picture, it's this concept that the quality of my education shouldn't be determined by my zip code. So,
I could use that for myself. Mike, my son was going to be going from Colgate Elementary to high school and junior high. I visited areas like any parent would, and this, I guess, was in the mid-1990s, 1994, 5, 6. Do I want my son to go to Towson High, Delaney High? We were going to live in Baltimore County because I that's where I was going to live at that time in my life, where my business was, where my background was, to send my son to county school. We wound up living in Perry Hall, right? And my son went to, I always tell the Coward Hall people, my son went to the Hall, Perry Hall. You know, they love that. But I remember that period of time and thinking to myself, no offense to anywhere else, because I could, you know, I could name any other place around the Beltway. I was only focused on 3 or 4 middle schools based on people I knew who were involved in education at that point to say, if you were me, where would you move?
Parents have those discussions.
Every day. And the notion that we're still all these years and that the gaps widened more. And I learned a lot about this in Howard County. I attended a meeting and I saw angry parents and I learned more of the conceptual part of it. And I remember as a child, even in Baltimore County, we were going to close an elementary school in a cluster. My father went to the school. We fought. We PTA'd. We signed. We did all these political things. The political candidates that got behind not closing my school. And they wound up closing Eastwood Elementary at that time instead of my school. It was literally 1979, 1980. It's really amazing. You know, 40 years later, you would still go back to certain neighborhoods and say, oh, that's where I would have sent my kid in 1994. That's the decision I would still make in 2021. And equity and equitable and equal, somewhere in there, learning the definitions of where funds go when they're needed and when they're not needed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I think you gave a good example of what was happening in across America. You know, when we're not investing in public education, then those who are running public education, we have to make decisions. We have to look at our budgets. We have to start trimming down on in areas that could impact students, curriculum, teachers, facilities, looking at, does it make sense to keep this building open with 200 students and 20 staff members, or does it make sense to merge so we can save? Because, you know, we all did that. That just wasn't a Baltimore County public school issue. That was across, across Maryland. You had to look at facilities, and because of investment or lack of investment in our budgets, superintendents had to make decisions. What I'm saying to our school leaders is that equity means every student is getting what he or she needs. So we're going to give the standard funding. If you're this size of a school, you're going to get X number of teachers or your operating budget, et cetera, et cetera. But as we look at the data, going back to your point, when we have data that there are significant needs in this building, how do we differentiate that staffing so you get what you need at your school, Don, but you may get something slightly different because of needs. There's a standard in how we're going to fund, but then we got to look at how to differentiate, because folks are looking at, well, I want what such and so has in their building. I want that program. I want, but what are the needs of that school? What's that vision of that school? And therefore, you know, I like diversity among the programming, but what we have to do, what I'm really going to be focusing these 4 years, is how do we differentiate our staffing to meet the needs of students? It goes back to the data. Let the data drive some of these decisions. It goes back to the people, the human capital. Are we hiring the best? Are we hiring the right person and placing them in the right location? Do we have the right program and resources to meet the needs? So for me, equity, every student is getting what he or she needs to be successful. And that's what public education should be
about. But all the schools aren't the same, right?
All the schools are not going
to
be the same.
I
will say this. You made a point about there's always the talk in the parking lot about, well, is school A good? Right. Is school A better? B is better. You know, that is helpful. I too, as a parent, I had those conversations. But I had to go in. It goes back to the earlier point. Once you go in and visit, some of our schools, people are talking about situations that happened years ago. The school is not
one
the same.
One incident that happened.
One incident
years, sure, right.
Or the word on the street. Go and visit. Go and visit and see. Like you say, you can walk in, how are you greeted? Go and ask if you can visit a classroom. I think just making that transparent, and it may not be a fit for whatever reason, but, you know, I shared this earlier. It's really rebranding. That's our job, rebranding many of our schools. It's some of that history that's causing some decisions to be made as to why parents are not choosing our schools. And we do have to look at, for Baltimore County, we do have to look at the number of private schools that are in our area, and we have to somewhat compete with them, compete in terms of programming, size of classrooms, just that individual approach that they give, the counseling and support, career readiness, athletics. You mentioned Calvert Hall. Yeah, you know, we have to compete with some of those things that's the reality of what we live in Baltimore County.
You mentioned counseling. One of the nice things that happens here on Baltimore Positive, and again, we're with Baltimore County School Superintendent Dr. Darrell Williams talking education, and Nestor and I are learning a lot. One of the nice things about our listeners is when they hear folks are coming on, they'll send us questions. And a couple that came in today really tied in, I think, to the big discussion you're having about trying to address all these issues. One was a real desire for the school system to take a serious look at behavioral health issues. Mm. And that more and more, I mean, it's as sad as it is to talk about, is if we look across the system with 115,000 students, we're going to have students in our system commit suicide this year. It's tragic. You had it when you were a high school principal. I had it. When those things happen, they rock
they
a
do.
Community.
Yes.
And they then begin to look at ratios and the fact that Baltimore County somewhat lagged behind national recommendation and state in terms of support services. Does this budget that you've put on the table begin to address that
Absolutely.
Gap?
Absolutely. We put in more, a request for more counselors and social workers.
We hear about a lot in the city,
yeah,
right, with trauma.
Yeah.
And
so our counselors, you know, it is a desire to get to that national ratio. I don't know of a school district that has that
national. It's like 1 to 300 or something.
You know, it's an incredible goal to reach.
Expensive.
Very expensive. And to your point, we're seeing our kids are dealing with a lot of trauma. A lot of trauma that we didn't see 10, 20, 30 years ago. And with that, our counselors are working really hard, getting to know the students, working with the families. In my experience from Montgomery County, having worked with the alternative school, we looked at the need for more social workers, because the social workers are can go beyond where the counselors can go based on their training and expertise because of the needs of students and in some cases students and families, and they can provide that wraparound services to, and resources or access to resources for our families. But absolutely, that is in the budget for us to get more counselors and more social workers. The needs are there.
Now, in addition to that, thank you for that clarification. The other thing that we hear, and again, it's a $1.8 billion operating budget, certainly requires, I've been on both sides, as you know, I sat on the county side and I've sat on the side that you are, and you know, you said you put forth a budget that reflects what we need. In the face of this, we hear these horror stories across the nation about teacher retention, and that 50% at the end of the third year leave the profession. I know the Teachers Association has put out some numbers this year that a couple hundred have left already this year. What if you can talk about the challenge of teacher retention, what we can do about it, and then the difficult decisions you had to make this year when you offered a 1% raise to teachers in Baltimore County, many of whom I think feel, hey, I appreciate your budget, Tim, but we deserve better than that. So that's there's a lot in there.
So I think it's fair that our teacher unions push back a little bit on the 1%. But I also know, and having conversations with our county exec, just what happened prior to my arrival. And so he had to deal with a deficit. He had to raise taxes. And so I wanted to have a balance. I wanted our teachers to say, yes, I value you. We're going to put something in there for you. You know, I think all of our different unions, we want to be competitive with the nearby counties such as Howard County, Harford County. I'm going to name them. Howard County, Harford County, Anne Arundel. Those seem to be the popular ones that our staff may leave and go to. In some cases, they may live there, so it makes sense. But I think it's fair that they wanted more, but the reality is I had to balance. I wanted to give them something, but also, in addition, as they talk about compensation, they've said to me constantly about the work conditions, the discipline, the acknowledgement, the preparation, the resources. So in addition to what they consider a low percentage of compensation, I put in more money for that to address work conditions. And so we're still working through that. The board will be approving the budget February 24th or 25th. And so we'll see what that will end up being. So we will present that to the county. So I was really trying to balance, but I also had to say, as you mentioned, it's a pretty hefty budget. But I also know after my 100-day entry plan and visits to schools, I had to put forth that I really felt we are understaffed. I need more staff. I need more people in the trenches, more people working with our kids. I need to put that out there.
I think you're adding almost 400 teachers.
I'm adding a lot of teachers. So I know I've gotten the feedback about my budget and how folks felt that we want more, we deserve more. You absolutely do. Absolutely. But I also knew the constraints of the county. And so I thought, personally, I did a nice job of trying to balance compensation and work conditions there in the budget to meet our needs. First time. Now, this is the first time. Next year may be completely different. We'll see.
Well, let's jump back to your point on work conditions, because in the age of social media, everything is made more difficult. I look at your chief of staff who's with us today, Michael Dickerson. He didn't have any gray hair before social media. Now he has a speck or two, not much. But the whole issue that is always on social media probably takes an inordinate amount of time for all our principals is this whole issue of school discipline, student behavior. I mean, when folks talk about public education, it seems to me that's where they go. So sort of give us all the schools you've been in. You've been in 109, I remind folks. Dr. Darrell Williams has visited 109 of the 175 schools. What's your sense, and I know it's controversial, of where we are with student behavior in Baltimore County?
So I'm pleased that I walked into Baltimore County, that there was a new office created called the Office or Division of Climate and School Safety, which says we're going to take this seriously. And we have a new chief who came in. Actually, he came from Montgomery County. In his background, former middle school principal, consulting principal, and counselor. He probably would have been a good counselor for you.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah,
right.
I think so.
I would have turned out better.
And so that has been the theme since my entry about the discipline. So we came together, have a work group looking at our system discipline framework and really putting some substance around that and some agreements. Then every school developing their discipline plan. So if an incident happened, how do they respond to it? And being very consistent. The other piece that I'm so pleased about that I didn't have in Montgomery County, we have SROs in all of our secondary schools, and they work with our elementary schools. So just to have that resource is such a bonus for our county. But I will say we do have to follow our plan, a discipline framework, and we have to respond appropriately. What's happening now is to what you're getting to, what's being posted on Facebook or social media may not tell the whole story. It tells a piece of it, or what you may observe, or what the rumor may be. But we're holding our folks accountable. But we don't have zero tolerance anymore. We don't have...
Tell folks what that is.
Zero, that I can say, if you do this, you're definitely going to get this consequence of 10-day suspension and potentially a recommendation for expulsion.
It always seemed to me that removed the human element and the human decision-making part from the discipline process.
Right. However, folks are interpreting, well, we're getting soft on these infractions or what these circumstances are. No, that doesn't mean that. That means we got to keep our kids in school. We got to keep the learning happening. But we also have to have our schools safe. We also have to make sure we are responding appropriately to the circumstance and the individuals involved in the circumstance. So as I shared with our principals, the start of this school year, upcoming school year, we will have a revised discipline framework. Principals will have the discipline plans, and we are still going to expect our students to conduct themselves appropriately. And when that doesn't happen, then there is a response. We don't always share the response, because that's another folks. People want to know, well, what happened? You're not going to know what happened. You're not going to know all the details to a particular incident or to a particular student. But, you know, I want to make sure that our staff, our community, our parents, our kids understand we have taken this seriously. We have been working with our partners, the police, to make sure we are in communication with things that are happening in our community that sometimes will stem into a building. This is something that has been a common thread since I arrived.
Was this an issue in Montgomery? I love it that you came from another school system. Did Montgomery County have the same discussions about student behavior that we're having in Baltimore County?
I was going to say, is it every... After Parkland and all of these things, I would think the whole country, every person that sits in a chair has a policy that and has really put a lot of time and effort into this.
Oh, absolutely.
That maybe you didn't when you signed up for this 30 years ago, thinking you're going to be a teacher, right?
Well, absolutely. Montgomery County years ago had to deal with this, making sure it's communicated and that the families knew about it. But, you know, we all deal with it, any day something can happen at any school. Regardless of a policy, something can happen. It's our response, our timeliness of response, and if we can communicate, we can communicate that it's been addressed. But I think nowadays with social media, folks want more details. And then we have situations where kids are posting incidents, they're videotaping incidents from their cell phones and putting it on their social media, and that's causing some of the anxiety that, ooh, is my school safe? And we do respond. We respond to every situation. The issue now is folks want more than what we can share about incidents or students. And
but
so,
it's safe to say, I think if folks are listening and watching, you're the school superintendent. You believe that they're entitled to safe and orderly environments in their schools, and that true disruption really has no place in a Ballmer County Public School.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. As a parent, as an educator, I believe that. What I've learned over the years is that our response is not that zero tolerance, heavy-handed, throwing the kid out, because we're finding there's a reason, there's a root cause for this action in most cases. And it's getting back to that trauma or experiences. Again, our kids are just dealing with some things that I can't only imagine that dealing with at right, and I grew up in D.C. I can't imagine that they're dealing with at age 14 and 15.
Yeah, it's a different
age 14 and 15. I was enjoying life. I'm not thinking about where am I going to sleep? Will I have access to my clothes? Will I see some violence in front of me? Do I know where my siblings are? Do I know where my parents are? I don't have my school supplies. You know, I might get teased because I don't look the same as others or sound the same. There's a lot that our students are dealing with.
Well, listen, thank you very much. A couple of quick items before we let you get out of here and on with your day. You're a busy guy. One of the things I hear over and over is we need to take an in-depth look at what we're doing in middle schools. And I don't think that's unique to Baltimore County either. Oh, what's your sense of middle school instruction, the way it's laid out? And is it something that we're going to take a look at as a school system?
You must have been in my cabinet meeting a month ago. I'm pretty sure he was. We had this same exact discussion, just looking at the data. Again, data causing us to ask more questions. For us, and so the team, we're developing a little task force to look at middle school instruction, of course involving our middle school leaders, just to see what's working and what's not working. For us in Baltimore County, what I'm working through with my team is that articulation from elementary to middle, because we don't necessarily have, in every case, we don't have a pure articulation. So if you went to this elementary school, you directly went into this feeder middle school. We have kids who are interested in our magnet programs. We have a unique articulation pattern. So that's what I want to kind of pull back. You know, how do we get more of student achievement at the middle school? Again, building that success so when they enter in high school, that trajectory is still achieving them to their goal. So we just had that conversation about let's look at our middle school model.
And I assume tied into that is math instruction, right?
Well, you know, as a former math teacher.
You can't be happy with, and this isn't just on you. I remember the previous superintendent sitting in my office when I was county executive talking about. She said, Donna, I've got some concerns about our math program. We've got to get into that. And then, of course, she was gone before that happened. So you've inherited, she had some concerns. You have some concerns as well in taking a look at the math program?
Absolutely. We did. We had an audit from Johns Hopkins, gave some incredible feedback and what we need to do differently. And we're implementing some of those strategies, and we'll continue each year to implement. But absolutely that.
Is it a sequencing issue?
I don't think it's a sequencing issue. That's been a question. Do they take Algebra 1, then Algebra 2, then Geometry, or Algebra 1, Geometry?
By the way, that messed me all up.
It messed you all up.
When you, I thought you were a math teacher, I'm like, man, this could have gone either way with you and me.
Well, as a math teacher,
you could have thrown the towel in on me.
I'm going to put you on the spot, and I apologize for this, but as a math teacher, you must have some opinions as to why our students' math scores are not where they should be. You must have some initial thoughts.
I do. I'm a little biased, I think. So our math curriculum can be a mile wide and an inch deep. We got to get it needs to be the in-depth learning of mathematics. And I was in a first grade class the other day, and I was like, wow, if that learning can happen from first grade all the way through eighth grade, we're solid. we're solid.
Because that teacher was digging down.
Digging deep down. It's getting back to that critical thinking, putting words on paper, problem solving, all of that. If we can do that, it's the written curriculum. I've been very candid about it. So the written curriculum, our curriculum. Are we getting the depth and not just we're covering? So we got to deal with that. Then we got to look at the taught curriculum. Are we going in to actually see the teaching happening? So that's our teacher leaders, our assistant principals, our central office. And then there's the assess. So I always felt, even as a former teacher, the curriculum was so much to deal with that it became more coverage than actually making sure our kids mastered the concept. And if they can master it, again, I go back to that first grade class. If that can happen from first grade to eighth grade, Baltimore County, we are in good hands. But it is our work to help our teachers understand the curriculum, for our writers and the developers, and not have it so complex that folks can't get to all of it. And then for our administrators and principals to be in the classrooms to give that feedback. See, again, you're talking to a teaching and learning superintendent. It's all about our students.
You're teaching me, and I'm learning.
We're gonna wrap up with Nestor's favorite stuff. Nestor, you love that. What kind of tree are you and everything? I happen to see online that the Doc, you love music.
Yes.
So we're going to ask you, we're going to play, so what kind of music?
So I like
Nestor's a music guy.
I like jazz and gospel music.
All right, fair enough.
So.
And you have a
What's
passion?
In your car right now? What's playing? Give me a jazz. I mean, jazz is wide. I mean, jazz can be David Sandberg, can be Louis Armstrong. Wait,
so my
you?
Father was a jazz musician, so I go back to the clarinet and the saxophone. So I have albums of Ella Fitzgerald.
The Count Basie Orchestra kind of stuff?
Nat King Cole. Nice. I mean, I have albums that...
For those that aren't able to play it.
Tell folks kind of stuff.
Tell folks what an album is, Nestor.
Oh yeah, sorry.
And then the other thing I was struck by was you have a passion for the historically black colleges, and you hope to visit each and every one. Where does that come
from? I've been to Coppin and Morgan.
Where does that come from?
That counts.
That counts.
You
check those off.
We are the voice of Coppin State, by the way.
Where does that passion come from?
Well, that came from where I started, where I began, where I got my bachelor's degree, was at Hampton University. And if you study the history of the historically black colleges and universities, it's incredible that many of those dorms and buildings were built by students, how they raised money, how they paid their teachers. And understand, back then, those HBCUs were really secondary schools for many of our black Americans to at least get a skill set so they can work. It's amazing if you just go back to that history. And so my father was a historian. He just loved history. And I swore I would never study history. I would never study. That's why I became a math teacher. But as I got older, the history started to intrigue me. And now I feel like I'm becoming like my father. So I have that desire to go to every one of those HBCUs, and we have some that are closing, unfortunately, just to walk on that campus to read about it. You can read about it, but being on campus and seeing the facilities
powerful. And
talking to students, powerful. See, again, I'm relational. Even though my strength finder says I'm very disciplined, futuristic, strategic, but there's this relational
piece. Strength finder?
Yeah.
What's that?
Gallup. We had a Gallup survey back in Montgomery County to say, what kind of leader are you? So what are your five dominant strengths?
I want to study this. It's good. I like
this. It's good work. So that's
second
that desire.
Day we're going to do this.
Thank you. Second day.
Anything to wrap up?
Yeah, I got one final question. So, I mean, 115,000 students, 20,000 employees, $1.8 billion budget. What's the thing that keeps you up? I mean, what's the most important thing for you to get done, to measure at being a measurement, a math guy, 18 months, 24? You know, what can you say? I'm new to this. I'm trying to implement all this. What's the thing that's going to pop first that makes you hero, or makes you feel good, or makes you feel like, hey, I got that. That happened. I made that happen.
So, for me, it's the data.
Okay.
I'm really looking at what we're seeing growth. It's all about growth and meeting targets. But for me, it's just to make sure. What keeps me up night is I always want to make sure our students and staff are safe. So,
sure.
You know, I wake up in the morning. I'm always checking my phone. Mm-hmm. Is there an incident? Is everybody okay? Okay, everybody's okay. That keeps me up night. Or whether I have to decide we're going to close school for inclement weather or not. That keeps me up.
No right answer on that.
There's no right answer on that.
Really fair question.
There's no right answer.
There's no right answer.
How often does your phone go off during the day where there's been a fight in the hallway, in the middle, anything like that? It comes to your desk. That's something that that your office needs to find out that something happened in a school. How often does that happen?
So folks keep this office informed, but if it elevates where it's bigger than a fight,
that
you
stops
know,
your day.
You know,
that stops
it,
your day.
It does. I will get informed. I will know about it. And I've been, in some cases, I've reached out to the principal and said, and actually visit when there's a situation. I said, listen, you've had a horrific situation. I just want to check in on you. Mm-hmm. Or I might send an email just saying, just thinking about
you. Stress at every level.
That goes back to your belief in relationships.
It's about
caring about
I can't
people.
Get to all 175 schools and programs and centers, but I just want folks to know I know about it. Just checking in. And then I have folks who directly supervise schools, so they know every situation that's
every
happening.
Every kid in school knows about it. Every teacher knows about it. It's adult social media. Right. I mean, that's a difference from 20, 30 years ago.
That Facebook, I tell you. I tell you. It keeps us busy.
That darn Mark Zuckerberg.
Hey,
I don't know about
stuff.
You, Nestor. I'm a lot smarter than
much.
I was an hour ago.
You got it, man. Darryl Williams, the good doctor.
Thank you,
joining
doctor.
Us here
enjoyed
in the
it.
Bill. We're going to be back. We got a whole bunch more stuff going on.
Baltimore Positive.
Ted Venatoulis.
Downloaded. It's free wherever you get your podcast.
I have never spoken to Ted Venatoulis in my life. I'm really looking forward to this.
We're going
to
get
my
a
dad
Baltimore.
Campaigned against him in the 70s.
We're going to get a Baltimore County history lesson. BaltimorePositive.com. Or download wherever you get your podcast.
Kirby Fowler as well. Make sure you're checking that at Baltimore Positive as well.
All the mayoral stuff. Election early April vote 14th. Begins April 16th.
April 14th. Hold the date.
Election April 28th because, Nestor, democracy is not
a spectator sport.
There you go.
I got my shoulder pads and my
there
helmet
you go.
On. We're back for more WNST and Baltimore Positive from the Ville. Appreciate you tuning in.